7 o'clock. Good morning, Pyle. Jim and the Buckeye Boys from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Women's Final Four is set. We'll talk more about that coming up. Avs lose. Lose to another bad team. One of the worst teams in the NHL in Columbus last night. Their top three scorers were out. Avs fall 4-1. Chance to gain some ground on Dallas. Didn't make that happen last night. Oh, yeah, and then there's the Colorado Rockies. Amaga looked good yesterday, didn't he? For the Cubs.
He's really good.
He's really good.
I know our old buddy Kyle Stanley from Channel 11 did a lot of JUCO work, has a Cubs podcast. He's really high on Imanaga, and it kind of showed yesterday.
Imanaga was...
That dude's pretty good.
Showed at Imanaga with a phenomenal performance yesterday.
I mean, we'll have to couch that in the fact that it was the Rockies, but he still looked pretty good.
He still looked pretty good. I mean, pitching against a Major League Baseball
team. That's true. They're grown-ups and professionals.
They are grown-ups and professionals. We may be down on our Rockies, but...
That's true.
And then Ronel Blanco with the season's first no-hitter.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was an April Fool's joke.
30-year-old guy, though. One-time infielder. Made the transition like he was 18, 19 years old. Mm-hmm. But Imanaga yesterday, 9 strikeouts. He had a no-no going for a while.
Yeah, he did.
Chris Bryant got a nice ovation from Cubs fans and probably went 0-for-4.
Twice for Rocky. A lot of 0-fers last couple of years at Wrigley Field.
Yeah. So, Rockies 1-4. We're not changing our predictions. We're not going to do that. We made them and we made that bed.
We're going to stick to them.
We're going to have to lie in that bed. Oh, Nolan Jones with double error. Ooh, woof. It's not good yesterday.
Yeah. Well, he heard the show Thursday morning talking about how he was going to be my Rocky to watch best offensive player. So he decided he might be, but he's going to be their worst defensive player.
2 errors on 1 at bat in the 6th inning. Ooh. Ooh. Dropped the fly ball. And just, yeah.
Man.
Oh.
It was not good.
It was just a really rough day yesterday for the Rockies.
But hey, I was able to stream it. That's fantastic. Ooh. And listen to it on the team.
Yeah.
Got my money's worth, quote unquote.
You got some baseball. That's true. That's good.
Got baseball. It was afternoon baseball. Big fan of afternoon baseball.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
That's always good. Baseball on the radio is always a good thing. Yeah, Nick Mears continues to look good. I'm trying to find some bright spots here.
Yeah.
Pitched well yesterday out of the pen.
They're inching closer to football season. Some positives to take away.
just looking for some little rays of sunshine. That's all I'm looking for. Oh, they only...
We're 9 innings closer to training camp.
3 bleeping hits. That's all we got. Yeah.
Yeah. Yikes. Yeah, Imanaga's... He's pretty good.
Yeah. And, well, Imanaga was really good yesterday. 6 innings. Couple of hits. Did not give up a run. Of course, Chuck Nasty broke up the no-no yesterday on Imanaga. To go to Hudson wasn't horrible yesterday. It wasn't terrible.
No, not really. He was fine.
Couple of strikeouts, couple of walks, 3 runs, 4 hits. Went 5 1/3. Wasn't brutal, but this offense right now is so
offensive.
So offensive and so punchless right now. Oh, boy. Anyway.
It's going to be a long summer. These guys can't figure out more than 3 hits.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long summer.
It's going to be a long summer. All right, so we've got some thoughts about the Rockies off to a 1-4 start.
Chris Bryant doesn't have a hit yet this season.
He does not. No. Yep. Yeah. Chris Bryant does not have a hit. No. 0-4 yesterday, as I mentioned earlier. And then Ronel Blanco. We'll talk. Well, you'll hear from Ronel Blanco. Well, you hear from him and his interpreter, so he hasn't quite dove into the language like Ellie De La Cruz of the Reds has. But Blanco, just his wife just gave birth to their child, and big moment for him. 30-year-old guy. An extremely unlikely guy to throw a no-hitter, particularly with Houston. And
yeah, like I said, I thought it was an April Fool's prank yesterday.
Here's something interesting. The Houston Astros are responsible for 4 of the last 7 no-hitters, dating back to Christian Javier, Hector Neris, and Ryan Presley's combined effort against the Yankees in 2022.
They're cheating again. That's what it is. That's what I hear. Cheating again.
Framber Valdez, no-hitter Guardians. 4 Houston pitchers combined to no-hit the Phillies in Game 4 of the 2022 World Series.
That was the second time that year that the Guardians had been no-hit. I think they got no-hit 3 times that season. That was a lot of fun.
So, Astros become the 7th franchise in Major League history to have at least 3 consecutive seasons with a no-hitter.
That is interesting.
Giants, 2012, 2015. Dodgers, 62-65. Did it in 4 straight years. Astros tie the Angels, 73-75. Orioles, 67-69. Red Sox, 19-16-18. And Cleveland, 46-48. Doing it 3 times consecutively. They have 17 no-hitters, the most no-hitters thrown by any club since the Astros' first season in 1962.
A couple of those are Nolan Ryan no-hitters, though, aren't they?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes, that would be the
case. That helps the numbers out a little
bit. That helps a whole bunch. And if you're wondering, hey, was this the earliest no-hitter in Major League Baseball history?
There's an opening day no-hitter a while back, wasn't there?
Earliest by date in Major League history yesterday. Huh. Keep in mind, Major League Baseball season is getting earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
So, but it is by
apparently
date.
6 weeks of spring training doesn't get you ready to take some hacks against Neris Blanco or whatever his name is.
Ronel Blanco.
Ronel
Blanco.
I was close. That's had an R in it.
That's right. Amanaga was having, I had to finally get into Amanaga.
Yep.
It's Amanaga. Not that it's that tough to say.
It's not the worst Japanese name in the league.
Oh, no, it's not.
Not at all.
No, it's not.
Yeah. How would you cheat, though, if I made the joke about the Astros cheating? How would you cheat to get a no-hitter? Would you bang the trash can like they're going to swing at this one? I don't know how that would even be possible.
I'm not sure.
Circling.
All I know is just make sure your catcher's pitch comm is off.
Yeah.
Make sure it's, turn the volumes down.
Turn the volume down. Maybe that's what they're going to do next. They're going to put in Miracle Ear and crank it up on the back ear so they hear the catcher's pitch comm.
Maybe so.
That would be a hilarious way to cheat. Have a scouting report. This catcher is partially deaf, so his pitch comm is going to be loud.
What?
That would be spectacular.
Oh. And Blanco was making just his 8th career start. The only reason he was pitching was because Verlander, Urquidy, McCullers, and Garcia are all on the IL right now.
Yeah, the Astros' best rotation is on the injured list.
Yeah, and so he normally would not have had that opportunity. And he made the most of it, throwing the no-hitter.
I think the more surprising aspect is not the unknown throws a no-hitter. It's that he broke camp and then went 9 innings.
Yeah.
If Dusty Baker, he'd still be out there throwing it, but have him go 9 innings 4 days after spring training is like, that's surprising.
Yeah, that's, well, they're like, hey, look, this 30-year-old guy, let's just let him go.
Yep.
Just let him run. Did you watch any of the women's basketball last night?
Yeah, I watched about 3.5 quarters of Iowa and LSU. Once it got out of hand, I was like, all right, I'm done.
Gayle Clark's pretty good, isn't she?
Turns out she's all right.
She's pretty good. Pretty good basketball player. 41.12 assist game.
You tell it's later in the season, a little bit of zip is off her fastball on some of those passes.
A little bit.
The girls can handle them now, as opposed to earlier on in the season, she's just zinging the rock around the court, flipping, skidding through hands and going out of bounds.
Is it fair to compare her to Jokic in terms of her passing? There are moments you go, that's pretty good. I don't know if she's quite as good, but she's close.
The court vision
is
comparable.
Yes. The spectacular pass isn't quite
there. The execution is different because she very much plays House of Fire, right? There's not one play in Caitlin Clark's playbook where you're like, it doesn't even look like she's trying. And that's the Joker. Jokers, there's a lot of...
makes it look so easy.
Yeah. She looks like she's trying. The vision and the court awareness.
Spatial awareness of where players are on the floor. Mm-hmm. The anticipation of essentially throwing players open.
Yeah.
Like a quarterback, which both of them do well.
Mm-hmm.
Where they throw to a spot, and I expect you to get to that spot.
I was, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but follow me. With some of the camera shots that ESPN had, like high above the hoop, so you could kind of see the lane, or the how did she see her? She was behind a defender type passes. Little Dan Marino-ish. Just like, you know what? I can make this throw.
Yeah.
Zing. And it's a lay-in or whatever.
I still want to watch her shoot threes. It's like there is no fear. There is no place in the floor that she won't shoot a three.
She is a coach's worst nightmare. She has to be, because there are very few good basketball decisions when it comes to keeping possession that she makes. She just happens, whether it be through skill or luck, just happens to make it work. Like, some of those passes shouldn't be made because of the low probability of success.
And you can say the same thing about Jokic, though,
too. Same exact thing.
It's like, why? What? Oh, it's incredible. You're right. It's like, that's a great decision. Yeah. Wow, what a great pass.
And like some of her shot selection, yeah, she makes it, so it makes it a little easier to stomach. But it would drive me nuts as a coach, as like a freshman or a sophomore. Like, what are you doing? Don't. Okay, that worked, but let's not shoot from there anymore. Her shot chart is essentially the entire upstate New York area last night.
But in the case of a player like her and Jokic, they do it so often. How do you tell them no? Because they do it with such consistency. And when the game's on the line, when they need to put together a run, fourth quarter, they both are there making plays. I get what you're saying, and it's true. And you say that a player that, you know, goes down, hits two, heat check, and then misses the next three, makes two or three bad passes, then makes three or four really good passes. They're both very, very, very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Don't turn the ball over a ton. Make incredible passes, can score pretty much any place they want. And they can, well, Jokic can score, has more scorability, if you will, or ability because he can score inside because he's a big guy.
He's just bigger, yeah.
She's definitely very perimeter-oriented. She can get to to the rack, and she can drive and penetrate, but she's not going to post up. She's not Angel Reese.
She's got a quick first step.
Yeah.
But she doesn't always use it because she doesn't need it.
And how she gets separation to shoot the three. I mean, there's
part of that, though, that's on, who is it, Mulkey? Coach for LSU, right?
Yeah, Kim Mulkey.
Part of her openness for Caitlin Clark last night is on Kim Mulkey. How do you let her get across half court and not have somebody in her face?
Like the Van Lith girl, the transfer that we talked about yesterday. There were times she was all over Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
But Clark would just make that little step.
Little jab step, little and jab then step back. And then,
And it was great. And it's, you think you're playing her, you forced her out far enough. And just when you think that, she's got you right where she wants you.
Yeah.
Because she has such incredible range.
You can't go under a screen, though.
No.
Like, you got to go, you got to find a way to get over the top of it.
And
commit a foul, fine. Have her make one at a time.
And it's like Colorado on Saturday. Colorado did a decent job on her early on. But what did she do? She passed them to death. She just killed them distributing the basketball.
She'll break off one of those passes enough to where Van Lith has to take a step back to kind of cut off that lane a little bit. Then that's all she needs. She doesn't need a ton of space to get her shot off.
No. Or the cases where there is. Van Lith would be right in her face, but jab step, little step back.
Yeah.
Just doesn't need a ton of time to get that shot off.
But LSU couldn't go on a run last night because made bucket. They drop back on D, and Kaylin Clark could bring it across the midcourt stripe completely unopposed until she got right near the perimeter. That's inside her range. What are you doing?
Yeah, I didn't get that last night with Kim Mulkey. Why, if I'm going to go down, because I know that Iowa's got some decent players. The Martin kid's good.
Yeah.
They get, but she is that team.
Mm-hmm.
She's the best player in college basketball right now. In women's college basketball, not even close.
Right, and five good fouls each. Put them in her kitchen. Make her make a point at a time. Don't give her three at a time.
You know, Gigi Watkins is a good player. She had 29 last night for USC.
Yeah, she's really good.
But Clark.
Paige Beckers,
28 last night. But Clark's something special.
Mm-hmm.
And like we're telling some people something new here. I mean, you just keep kind of going. You keep waiting for her to come crashing back to earth.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't. She just keeps playing at an insanely high level, kind of like Nikola Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
She plays at such a high level.
Right.
And impacts the game in so many different ways.
She's so good that a bad game is still a good game for most other players.
Yeah.
I think, though, for ESPN and the NCAA committee, they did not get a win last night. That should have been the Final Four.
Should have been. Oh, absolutely.
Watkins, Beckers, Clark, Reese. That's not a random Monday night Elite Eight finishing set.
No.
That should have been the Final Four.
They should have had. It should have been LSU, Iowa in the Final Four.
Mm-hmm. Hey, USC, UConn on the other side. That would have been great.
Yeah, would have been.
They great. Just. Like, I know they were like, well, you know, we can't guarantee everybody will get there. But just to have it in an Elite Eight was.
But it's interesting how we talk about the field versus UConn and the men.
Mm-hmm.
Where South Carolina is, what, 36-0?
Sure, nobody's talking about South Carolina.
Yeah,
Don Staley is just like, all right.
They're just killing people.
Yeah.
And it's about Iowa. It's about Iowa. It's about Kaylin Clark. It's about Iowa. It's about Watkins. It's about Beckers. And there's South Carolina going.
Fine. Keep talking about
them. We're overall number one seed. We're undefeated. Keep talking about them.
That team lost five starters from a year. You can only have five.
Man, last time we checked, that's how that works in basketball.
Rules stipulate that you can only have five starters. And they just clubbed Oregon State on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been very impressive. But it's been so under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
If it's because of the Kaylin Clark mania.
They're probably the fourth most covered team that right this very second, not the entire season, but right this second, they're probably the fourth most covered team in their own Final Four, and they're undefeated.
Yeah.
Because it's just
crazy.
Oh, you got Kaylin Clark in Iowa. Look, she's fantastic. She's shooting threes from Syracuse. This is awesome. And then you have Paige Beckers like, oh, she's back from an ACL tear. And she was kind of Kaylin Clark before Kaylin Clark. She's fantastic. And then, hey, look, this neat little story. NC State, both men's and women's Final Four. And who's the other team? Oh, that's right. It's South Carolina.
Yeah, that's right, South Carolina. They're, 37-0. I think I said 36-0. 37-0.
It's hard to keep them all straight. It's
all right, 7:20. So a lot to dive into. Mav Day brought to you by Cutler Craft Coffee and Beer. We'll have that coming up 9 o'clock this morning.
Here's a sneaky question for you.
Sure, go ahead.
Is the women's Final Four more of appetizing than the men's because it feels less certain? We talked yesterday a lot about how UConn feels inevitable.
And we should be feeling that way about South Carolina, shouldn't we?
Yeah, you think so.
They're 37-0, but you're right. It feels like the women's Final Four is the more compelling, wide open Final Four than the men's Final Four. Though there's Purdue, Zach Edey, who's having a phenomenal tournament. You're back-to-back National Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Who's playing at an insanely high level right now.
He's very mop worthy. Most outstanding player.
It just feels like UConn with Klingon and Spencer and Caraban, and this feels like they have more weapons.
Mm-hmm.
That's a deeper basketball team. If Zach Edey,
so good fundamentally.
Yeah, and if Zach Edey doesn't play well, and as you know, he could end up with facing Klingon, which could be a neutralizer.
Mm-hmm. That'll be what? Hakeem Ewing level beefy dudes that, down low. Right?
That would be. Yeah, it just feels like even with South Carolina having an undefeated record, that UConn with Beckers and the way she's playing right now, it's a perennial Gito Auriemma, that's a perennial national championship.
I think they
contender.
Made 107 Elite Eights under Gino is what the number it feels like. Even though he's not that old. Yeah. It feels like they've made the Final Four every year for the last 30 years.
But with Iowa, it feels like unfinished business.
A little bit. Yeah.
And
I just hope last night wasn't mission accomplished.
Yeah, I didn't get that vibe. Didn't get that vibe.
Because they put the hammer down start of the third quarter. Yeah. They were pedal to the metal.
And Clark seemed extremely determined last night. I mean, she had 41 points and 12 assists.
Jay Williams pissed her off, apparently. Can't be called great without a ring.
Yeah, well, she's like...
Now she's mad.
She's mad. Way to go.
Yeah.
All the other teams are going, way to go. Thanks, Jay.
I do love... Who is it? It's Intuit or something? Where they take the famous people or famous names, but not that person, and put them through stuff.
Yeah.
Like the regular Caitlin Clark trying to do the rope ladder drill. She's tripping all over. That's pretty funny. That's a good spot.
That's pretty good. All right, 7:23, and it's time for...
What's happening?
Brought to you, as always, by ComWest, your technology partner. One call, one team, one goal, helping your business grow. ComWest helps business owners grow their business by providing quality, reliable, personalized technology solutions. IT services to meet your business needs, PC and server support, business phone system surveillance, network support, cybersecurity, backup and disaster recovery. And as a managed IT services provider, their technology service partner program delivers a cost-effective solution to all of your IT needs. Call them today, servicing the entire Western Slope, ComWest 970-242-8142, or go to comwestcorp.com. And we lead things off with the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. Iowa and UConn join South Carolina and North Carolina State, which UConn, NC State, both men's and women's teams in the Final Four, by the way. Congratulations. But they're into the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament's Final Four after wrapping up Elite Eight play Monday night. Number one seed Iowa got another huge game from star Caitlin Clark as the Hawkeyes got revenge from last year's loss in the title game to LSU. Iowa downed the Tigers 94-87 on Clark's 41-point, 12-assist game. The Hawkeyes will face UConn Friday night after Paige Becker's 28 points paced the Huskies to a 80-73 win over USC. The other semifinal will pit overall number one seed and undefeated South Carolina against NC State. The women's Final Four is in Cleveland on Friday night. The Avalanche lost ground on Central leading Dallas after losing at Columbus 4-1 on Monday. Colorado racked up 47 shots on one of the worst teams in the NHL, and Coach Jared Bednar says after a strong start in the first period, the second period was a clunker.
We didn't execute well enough in the offensive zone. Led to some, the bulk of their chances in the second period came from our turnovers in the offensive zone. At least two or three odd man rushes that are really dangerous and they capitalize on because of ozone play and turnovers.
The Blue Jackets' Alexander Nylander scored two goals for Columbus, with Chris Wagner getting the lone Colorado goal. The Avs are 3 points behind Dallas in the division standings. Rockies are 1-4 after falling to the Cubs on Chicago's home opener 5-0 Monday. A rare Nolan Jones double error gave Chicago a 3-0 lead in the sixth, with the Cubs tacking on two more in the seventh. Former Cub Chris Bryant received a standing ovation, finished 0-4 for the Rockies. Colorado's 1-4 tied for their worst start, and they have a run differential of minus 23. That's the worst in franchise history, by the way.
It's only April 2nd.
And it's only April 2nd. Also, as we talked about earlier, Ronel Blanco for the Houston Astros throwing the earliest no-hitter in Major League Baseball history in a 10-0 shutout of Toronto for the Houston Astros. Broncos added to their interior offensive line depth Monday with the signing of free agent Calvin Throckmorton. The 27-year-old played college football at Oregon before signing as a free agent with?
Denver Broncos.
No, back in after he played in college.
Cleveland?
No.
Oh, okay.
Come on. It's the Broncos. Sean Payton.
Oh, New Orleans Saints.
New Orleans Saints in 2020.
I'm like, not the Vikings. I don't remember. The Saints. That's right.
He was on the Saints practice squad before starting 14 games for then New Orleans and current Denver head coach Sean Payton. Throckmorton played or started 7 games in Carolina in 2023 and finished the season as a backup in Tennessee. His contract is a 1-year deal. Former NFL defensive tackle and Hall of Famer Warren Sapp has officially joined the CU bus coaching staff. Sapp spoke to players at a team meeting Monday. He was originally hired as a senior quality control analyst. According to Buffs beat writer Brian Howell, he's actually joining as a grad assistant, which allows him to work with players on the field, which he would not have been able to do if he worked as an analyst with the Buffaloes. The Fertile Monument Wildcats baseball team faces a tough challenge tonight in their quest for another Southwestern League title. The 6-4 Wildcats host Montrose and their dynamic two-way player Gage Wareham. Wareham, son of head coach Landon Wareham, has a 3-0 record with a 1.31 ERA on the mound and a .571 batting average at the plate. Wildcats head coach Casey Sullivan gave credit where credit is due when it comes to Wareham's play.
He's been solid for that ball club for quite a few years. Gage is a wonderful young man. We're just going to have to be ready for him. But again, it's kind of like we tell the boys, you know, we're not necessarily playing other teams. We're going to play that baseball, and we're going to try to beat the baseball better than the other team beats the baseball.
Fruita Monument's the reigning league champs, 6-4 winners of 4 of their last 5 after defeating a good Horizon club. Red Ox head coach Landon Wareham says the Wildcats have too good of an offense to overlook after that initial start.
It's too talented of a lineup to not swing the bat. Sure, they got off to a slow start. However, we know what they have in that lineup, and it's as loaded as you can get in the Southwestern League. We've always been under the belief that we got to control what we can control and handle the way we play the game.
You can hear Fruita Monument Montrose tonight on the team, 101.1 FM, 1340 AM here in the Valley, and Montrose, 102.1 FM. I'll have the call along with Vern McGee tonight, pregame at 5:45, brought to you by Ken Richards State Farm. And Colorado Mesa men's lacrosse player Trey Corkin III is the RMAC Defensive Player of the Week. It's the second Player of the Week honor of the season for Corkin, who picked up 7 ground balls and forced 3 cause turnovers in the Mavs' win over Adams State. Mavs wrap up a 4-game homestand against RMAC newcomer Concordia Irvine Friday night at 7 o'clock. And that's a look at
what's happening.
Brought to you by ComWest, your technology partner. One call, one team, one goal, helping your business grow. Let them help you with your IT needs for your business. Call ComWest today, 970-242-8142, or go to comwestcorp.com. We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk about Women's Final Four last night. Also, the no-hitter thrown by Ronel Blanco last night for the Houston Astros. We'll have that and more coming up. You can text or call the show. Always great to hear from you on the team line, 970-242-1340.
First of all, it's hilarious.
Warp twisted individuals. Yes.
Yeah! The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back, Jim and the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Thanks for joining us today. All right, so you had the final 2 games of the Elite Eight of the women's basketball tournament last night, and you had some history being made last night with a couple of those games, with Caitlin Clark, when she hit the 3 last night to give the Hawkeyes the 61-52 lead over LSU with about 5 minutes left in the third. She became the all-time Division I leader in career-made threes with 538. Surpassing Oklahoma star Taylor Robertson, who did that over 5 seasons from 2018 to 2023. So Clark, who had 9 threes last night, sets another women's college basketball record in this, her final season in Iowa City.
She made 9 threes.
She made 9 threes. Yeah, 9 threes last night.
The focal point of the offense.
as the player that Kim Mulkey needed to stop last night, or at least slow down.
Not some random kid from Oakland University in Detroit.
No.
Yeah, you know what? Let's go ahead and, she's not going to hurt us.
Yeah.
You said, too.
She's going to hit it.
Was in her kitchen, a bit.
Yeah, she guarded her well on several occasions, but as we've seen, Clark just has such incredible range.
Yeah.
That you feel like you forced her out far enough. That's never enough. Her range is that good. She's that deadly. And along with Clark doing what she did last night, Juju Watkins, who's had an incredible freshman campaign for USC, that Watkins passed Tina Hutchinson for the highest scoring freshman season in Division I history with 899 points. Hutchinson had 898. She played for San Diego State in 83-84. And so, little history made. One of them, Galen Clark, wins the game, goes on to the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
Watkins, unfortunately for USC, she loses to Paige Beckers and UConn last night. Bringing some of the sound from last night. Galen Clark, 41 points, 12 assists last night. Gets the revenge against LSU, who they lost to in last year's national championship game. As Galen Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes back into the Final Four.
It's amazing to be back in the Final Four. It's so hard to get there, especially with this region and how loaded this region was. But, you know, we told ourselves we're the one seed for a reason. You know, we've earned this. We deserve to be in these moments. We're prepared for these moments. But I think we came out here and, you know, our second and third quarters, we played really, really good basketball. And LSU's a really good team. They're hard to guard. They're such good one-on-one players. You know, they break you down. They make tough shots. They killed us on the glass. But we were just resilient. You know, we never hung our head when things didn't go our way. And, you know, that can get you a long way. And, you know, I'm just proud of this group to go back to the Final Four. And, you know, you enjoy this. And then you get to Cleveland and you start prepping for your next game. You know, we want to win two more. And, you know, I think we have the power to do that.
And she got some help last night, too. Certainly, you saw a great performance last night from Kate Martin. 21 points last night for Martin. Mm-hmm. Had a couple of steals. Got on the glass a little bit. She had 6 rebounds last night. I mean, this is the stat line for Caitlin Clark. 41 points, 12 assists. She had 7 rebounds last night. Throwing a block shot for good measure. She did turn it over a team-leading 5 times, but I think if you're Lisa Bluter, you're going to be okay with that number. You'll be all right, considering what the outcome was.
Yeah, you turn it over 5 times, but you do have 12 assists.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good ATO ratio, though. It is easy to get 7 rebounds when your opponents take 88 shots.
Yeah. She was 6 of 7 from the foul line when she got to the foul line.
If that game goes to overtime, LSU's taking 100 shots in that game.
Probably, yeah.
It was the pure volume. And they hit on 38%. If they hit north of 40, then it's a different ballgame, I think. But the sheer volume of shots LSU took was baffling.
Yeah, 34 for 88 in that game.
That is, I think that's the hubris of a Kim Mulkey, I guess, in the we're not going to alter how we play to combat Caitlin Clark. And then 2 hours later, we're going home. If they hold the ball and not let her possess it offensively, if they shoot under 70 shots, they might win that game. Because how many fewer possessions does Iowa have? It was a 7-point game.
Yeah.
Kayla Clark's ridiculous. 9 of 20.
And then Iowa's 32 of 69.
Yeah.
And I think Kim Mulkey thought Angel Reese, Flonnie Johnson, that their game inside, particularly with Reese, was going to be the difference. And Reese set a tournament record for double-doubles. She had 17 points. She had 10 rebounds, or 20 rebounds, excuse me, last night. She had a monster game.
She was stellar defensively.
Yeah, and she was phenomenal defensively. And it wasn't like nobody else showed up. I mean, Johnson had 23 points last night. Mm-hmm. Williams had 18. Morrow had 14 points. I mean, 4 of their 5 starters were in double figures.
They just they only went to the bench like 3
they played
girls, maybe?
They played two.
Yikes.
Iowa played 3 off the bench. LSU played too.
Hey, LSU outscored in bench points 6-5.
But the big number is Caitlin Clark. I mean, with the 41 points, they just could not stop her last night.
No, and I don't know if you're going to, but you can limit how many times she's unstoppable by taking fewer shots of your own.
Exactly.
Work the shot clock a little bit. Like, you don't need to make a run at 100, both shots and points. You know, you just play a little bit stingier offensively.
It just felt like you said, Lisa Bluter, it's like, we beat them last time. We've got this. We've got Angel Reese inside. We're better inside with her.
Yeah.
Clark's due for a bad game. And no, she's gonna get hers. Nobody else is gonna get theirs.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Martin hurt, because Martin had her 21.
Yeah.
That nobody else will get anything but her. And that was not the case last night.
That hurt. A Folter had 16. You know,
Folter had the 16 points. I mean, they had two other players in double figures.
Mm-hmm.
Where we talked about LSU had four of their five in double figures. But the way Clark just impacted that game last night was, she does what she always does.
Yeah. Just outshoot your competition. And at some point, if you're a coach, you have to maybe change the way you play a little bit to combat just the pure volume of shots Caitlin Clark's going to put up.
You know, and I didn't catch Mulkey's presser last night. I don't know how much she blamed it on the media distractions and that kind of stuff.
And probably quite a bit.
But I mean, last night, Caitlin Clark by herself outshot LSU from three-point range by one. You also had, as we mentioned, UConn, USC last night for the final spot in the Final Four. And Paige Beckers, of course, the knee injury, the thing she's had to overcome from that, leading UConn last night to the Final Four with a 28-point performance, 80-73 last night, the victory for UConn over USC. After the game, Paige Beckers talking about going to the Final Four and a lot of other things as well.
So much gratitude. I'm a living testimony. I give all glory to God. He works in mysterious ways. Last year I was praying to be back at this stage, and he sent me trials and tribulations. But it was to build my character. It was to test my faith to see if I was only believer in the good times. But I just kept on believing. I did all I could so God can do all I can't. And just so much joy and pride for this team. I'm so proud. We're not even supposed to be here, and here we are, a godly miracle. And I'm just so proud. I can't even put it into words.
All right, that's Paige Beckers after the game last night.
All right, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
You're UConn, and you're not supposed to be in the Elite Eight Final Four?
Sometimes you have to tell yourself you're the underdog when you're not the underdog.
It's us against the world.
Because that's a program that has no tradition, no history. Yeah. To winning championships.
No one ever thought we'd be here.
Four.
Ultimate underdog. I love how she worked in U2 and Journey. Mysterious ways. Don't stop believing.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. I maybe heard a little Metallica in there with Nothing Else Matters.
Believe so. Believe she did working.
Some
Nothing
priest,
Else Matters.
They're heading out to the highway to go to Cleveland.
Did she say that?
She didn't.
I didn't hear her say heading out to the highway. We're heading out of the highway, baby.
Yep.
We got nothing to lose at all.
Cleveland, some heads are going to roll. One thing we're not going to do is break the law.
We're riding on the wind.
We're riders on the storm.
Now we're working from really good metal stuff to the doors, and doors are fine, but we're now.
It's not metal. Doors are good, though.
Doors are fine.
I think they're better than fine.
Used to be a huge fan of them, and as time went on, I listened to them so much when I was young.
That's probably
fair. I kind of got burned out on them. So still like them. Riders in the Storm's a great song.
They're going to rock and roll all night and party every day, UConn is.
Because They're hell-bent. Hell-bent for leather.
Hell-bent for leather.
Getting back to Judas Priest. All right. Also, you had Ronel Blanco tossing the no-hitter last night.
Nice.
For Houston. 30-year-old Ronel Blanco. His wife just gave birth to their child. Here's Ronel Blanco with his translator as well. Hopefully his translator does not have his bank account.
Suhara, is that who?
I'm going to assume that Ronel Blanco does not have Shohei Ohtani kind of money, by the way. So I don't think there's any problem there. But here's Ronel Blanco, the Astros, after the earliest no-hitter in Major League Baseball history, his first start of the season.
Cada esta niña me ha cambiado la forma de ver la vida y todo. Y nada, esto se lo dedico a mi familia y a Dios.
I see it as a great blessing, and, you know, great blessing for me and my family and the arrival of my daughter. I see it as a life-changing experience, and, you know, dedicate this to my family and my daughter. You know, it's been a very long road traveled for me. A lot of ups, a lot of downs, a lot of falls, a lot of me getting back up, but I think all of that has been worth it.
All right, so that's Ronel Blanco and his translator after throws the no-hitter, the earliest by date in Major League Baseball history, by the way. And his longest career outing prior to yesterday, want to take a guess?
Four and a third.
Six innings twice in 2023.
So bad.
And he becomes the 10th pitcher born in the Dominican Republic to throw a no-hitter. His teammate, Framber Valdez, Juan Marichal, Ramon Martinez, Jose Jimenez, Ubaldo Jimenez, Francisco Liriano, Irvin Santana, Edinson Volquez, Domingo Herman. Also his catcher, Yadier Diaz, born in the Dominican as well. Third case of a pitcher-catcher battery being from the Dominican completing a no-hitter. So that's kind of cool.
You say Ramon Martinez was in there?
Yes.
So Ramon got a no-hitter and Pedro didn't. That's interesting.
Yes, interesting. No doubt about that. All right, 744. Time for sound check.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Well, this comes to us from last night's game. Rebecca Lobo turning into Rude Becca Lobo about the city of Albany.
Caitlin's brother's here as well, though she told us they've been reaching out to me, and I've told them, just go find something to do in Albany. I'm staying in my room and just waiting for the game.
By the way, good luck finding something to do in Albany.
Wow, that's mean. That's mean-spirited.
No kidding.
Rebecca Lobo.
I know I heard her say that last night. Capital of New York State.
Mm-hmm. So the mayor tweeted out, there's plenty of things to do. I will take you to go see them. And then
there's the Hudson River sightseeing cruise. There's the Ghost of Albany haunted walking tour.
There's the Chamber of Commerce put out, if you need a list of things to do, go to our website.
There's a private axe throwing thing you can do for an hour.
Pretty good capitalization by Albany on Rebecca Lobo.
New York State Museum. The Albany Institute of History and Art. Come on, Rebecca Lobo. Come on. All right, 7:45. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Our college basketball insider, Wyatt Thompson, joins us next.
I'm the morning guy. I have a Facebook group, 16 members. Some call it a fan page. I don't know.
Oh, hell yeah.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. Talking college basketball with the team's insider, Wyatt Thompson, on The Jim Davis Show.
All right, he's the voice of Kansas State Wildcats. Wyatt Thompson joins us. Good morning, Wyatt. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you getting along? You good?
I'm doing fine. So where are you today, may I ask?
I'm actually at K-State's football practice, kind of hidden away from everybody. They're working in the indoor this morning. We've had something happen here in Manhattan. It's been a rarity here lately. We had rain overnight and raining this morning, so thankful for that. But, they're not quite halfway through spring practice, or right about halfway through, and excited for next fall. So just taking in a practice today, and then Thursday, and then Saturday of this week. So staying busy, or trying to.
Well, let me ask you something before we get into NCAA basketball tournament. Because one of the players that Mile High Report, the Broncos blog, they've been writing about is Kansas State tight end Ben Sinnott. Is it Sinnott or Sinnott?
Sinnott.
It's Ben Sinnott.
Yeah, like the senator. Yeah.
So Ben Sinnott is a player that there's some feeling the Broncos may look at drafting, the 6'4", 250-pound tight end played four seasons at Kansas State and had a nice career there, and got invited to the Reese's Senior Bowl as well. So Ben Sinnott, guy that maybe the Broncos might end up drafting when the April 25th draft gets underway.
That would be a dream for me. I'm just going to be honest with you. I love Ben Sinnott. He's an Iowa kid. He's from the same hometown as our coach, Chris Kleiman, which kind of probably led to him getting here. He was one of those guys that blossomed late. You'll like this part. Played six sports in high school. I didn't even know that he was offered that many, but even hockey was one of them. So he is an athlete, and he exploded the last couple of years here. He's always been a good player, but just because of how much bigger and stronger he got, he became a major factor in one of the best tight ends in our league. I don't know that you, if you're a Bronco fan, would go wrong with a guy like that. High character young man, I could certainly speak to that too. He's he'd be a very, very fine pick for the Denver Broncos. That would make my day, trust me.
Yeah, the combine, highest vertical, longest broad jump, and the fastest three cone of any of the tight ends at the combine. So definitely right. A very athletic guy playing six sports in high school. That I think it certainly speaks to that. So let's talk about, of course, we're down to the Final Four. Phoenix this Saturday, for the Final Four. Is you taking UConn to the field in this? Because it's certainly starting to feel like UConn, the way they're playing, that incredible 30-0 run they had against Illinois, mm-hmm. the Dan Hurley and UConn, the defending champions, are still the team to beat, the overall number one seed.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. And think about what you just said. I mean, you can look at their run here, and I've got the bracket in front of me. Stetson, Northwestern, San Diego State, all quality teams. But a 30-0 run against Illinois, and they're just clubbing everybody. I've said from the beginning that I think they have pretty much the most complete team in college basketball in terms of all of the pieces that you need to win. Good center, good guard play, they defend, they rebound, they're well coached, they have depth. It just goes on and on. I don't necessarily think that everybody else of the remaining four necessarily matches that. The question will be is, on a given day, would they be off a little bit, or is Alabama good enough to make enough shots to shock them, or, you know, Purdue for that matter? I love this Final Four for lots of reasons, but I'm not going to kid you. I thought Connecticut was the best team, you know, probably since January, if not before, and I think they're still that.
Zach Edey has played at an insanely high level, and I think one of the concerns that we had going to the tournament was, can Zach Edey play game in and game out to a very high level? And he has certainly answered that question during this tournament run. He's been phenomenal.
Well, you said it perfectly. Phenomenal is the right word from my perspective. He's just been dominant. And you would expect him to be that, but I'm not trying to take anything away from him, because when you compare his tournament numbers, you're starting to throw out some very interesting names, and I don't have to name them. You know, we're some of the best players of all time. So he's been really, really great. But I think the thing that has helped him the most is those guys around him that have been more consistent in this tournament than they were a year ago. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but to me, I saw a stat on them on a graphic watching the game the other day where they went from like 291 to number one in the country in a single season in three-point field goal percentage. When you put that on top of Zach Edey, look out. So that tells you what I think of Connecticut, if I think Connecticut's better than that bunch, because they're pretty good, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they're really, really good, and I think they're the only team I have left in my Final Four to my bracket.
Yeah, so. I get it.
I think we're kind of expecting maybe Purdue, UConn, Klingon versus Edey. That'd be a fun matchup.
Yeah, but I would pay to see Edey against the big man at NC State.
Oh, DJ Burns, yeah.
First, I think that is going to be intriguing too. And I'm not going to necessarily count NC State out. It's hard to be hot for. It's one thing to blow through the ACC tournament, win five in a row, but they've been good for a month now, right, or a little bit longer.
Yeah.
When's this the right end, or will it end? The two DJs are really good players. To me, I do love that matchup, though, because I think, if I'm being honest, I think Edie is going to struggle a little bit defensively with DJ, with his ability to move, even though he's 285-pound guy. And then I think, as strong as DJ is, I think you can get after him if you're Zach Edey too, and just get in his, play through his chest and get to the rim. Not sure how you see that. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I think that'll be definitely a challenge. The size of DJ Burns will be a problem, I think, for Zach Edey. I think there's little doubt about that. I'll flip it over quickly to the women's tournament. I know. Did you go to the Colorado K-State game, by the way? Did you go check that out as a spectator?
I did. Yeah, and I saw Colorado early. As a matter of fact, our men's first game was in Vegas, and they played LSU right before our game with USC. So I saw Colorado a couple of times this year, and they were darn good. This tournament's been pretty entertaining to watch. And a lot of storylines, right?
Absolutely. Well, we feel like it's the field versus the UConn men. You should feel that about South Carolina, right? They're undefeated. They're 37-0 right now. But it feels like the women's Final Four is more wide open and a lot of the momentum behind Iowa right now in Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, you said that, I think, exceptionally well, because I don't think there's any doubt that South Carolina has been the best team all along. And yet, when you watch last night and see that performance, it's like, hey, they got a shot, right? I mean, she's been the story over an undefeated team in so many ways by most of the media. That's just reality. And I get it. I understand it. She's a super talent. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if it comes down to that, how that one plays, because, man, that's pretty high-level women's basketball. They've moved the meter a little bit here in the last 4 or 5 years, haven't they?
Oh, no doubt about it. Gotta
give them credit for that.
Oh, no doubt about it. All right, Wyatt, yeah. So quick prediction. Who's playing for the championship coming up on Monday in the men?
Well, I'm gonna say UConn for sure, and I'm gonna go with Purdue slightly ahead of NC State. I like both teams, but I think Purdue, if those two guards shoot it the way they've shot it for the rest of the tournament, they'll get there.
What about the women?
Well, I just think that this may be Caitlin Clark's time, and yet there's part of me that says, don't go away from South Carolina. They're the deepest, best team. So I'm going to say South Carolina will win the women's tournament.
All right, very good. Hey, Wyatt, appreciate it. Thank you so much. Enjoy your time out at spring ball today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Good talking to you, bud.
Likewise, take care, Wyatt. Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Kansas State Wildcats, joining us from spring ball in Manhattan today. The Wildcats are out on the field. All right, we will take a break. We'll come back with hour two. We'll have pole dancing. Also next hour, give you a chance to win with a stadium center.